We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Soccer Podcast, Fantasy Show. I am here, Adam Zdrojek, with Ryan Belangi. We're doing the special Q&A, which is coming exactly a week before the Premier League season. We have Crystal Palace against Arsenal, Ryan's own Crystal Palace against Arsenal next Friday. But we're doing a special Q&A. He won King of the Pitch last season. In case you haven't heard, Ryan took down the 100,000 in the King of the Pitch. And Ryan, I guess, how have you been? And I guess the main question I think everyone wants to know, the first question is, have you figured out your taxes yet for next year?
Oh, that's not a fun thing to start the show off with. You know what? Living in London, for everyone that plays DK in the UK, there's no taxes on gambling. You can win.
Holy cow, what?
But that doesn't necessarily apply to me. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked into it too much. But yeah, it's crazy. You can win as much as you want gambling here and you don't have to pay any taxes on it. Now, I still might, considering I'm not like a British citizen and right. I'm an American citizen. But yeah, anyways, thanks. King of the Pitch. Yeah, 100K. Summer's been good. It's been sort of like a, you know, a 2 month long sort of celebration of sorts. I haven't had much to do. I've been grinding DFS baseball, you know, going out to dinner quite a bit, spending a little of the King of the Pitch money. We've had family here, my girl's family seeing the baby, my parents. So yeah, just a lot of going out, chilling, not too much going on. The dog days of summer, you know, I'm ready for soccer to be back. I like DFS baseball. It's fun, but it's not nearly as profitable and it's not as fun as soccer either. So yeah, it's good to be back. I'm excited. It feels like we didn't have much of a break, but I'm ready.
Yeah, I mean, someone posted in the Discord that you recently took down one of the women's Euro contests. So like you're still cooking away and winning contests, even though, you know, Premier League's not going on. So
yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit because I won it with a sub. First time I've ever won it with a sub in a GPP. But yeah, I love women's soccer. I love the way it plays for DFS. Most of the people don't necessarily know the way it plays for DFS. So they play it like similarly to the Premier League or the Champions League. And it just doesn't work that way most of the time. So I feel like there's a decent edge and it's one of the few women's sports that I enjoy watching. So yeah, I've liked the Euros.
There you go. The inside scoop there. I guess while I have the screen pulled up, I'm assuming most of the people are watching on Twitter or on YouTube. So you mentioned, so there's no taxes on gambling in the UK. I guess one of my questions, we kind of talked about it in the past. It's just, so you've been in Crystal Palace for a little bit and you have the FPL game, the Fantasy Premier League game, you know, the official game that's been around, I don't know how long, 20 something years or whatever, but there's 8 million people playing it, and I mean, we know that DFS, I'm not sure it's that big in the UK.
Right.
If there's no taxes on gambling, why isn't like DFS or I guess gambling plenty popular, but why are so many people playing FPL over DFS? It kind of blows my mind that it's not more popular.
It blows my mind too, and all of our minds over here. We've had this exact conversation with multiple people at DraftKings, with multiple people that work at DraftKings over in the UK. Yeah, you know, it's just a bit of a mystery. Everybody plays FPL, and there's like no money involved. But you have to beat 8 million people, and I don't even know what you win, like a kit from your favorite team at the end or something. I mean, like, and people love gambling over here. I mean, gambling is like part of the culture. It's not as frowned upon as it is in the States. It's not really in the States anymore as much, but yeah, I don't know. It's a mystery. I think it's because the game might be a little complicated just for someone to jump in. I don't know. You're going to lose a lot if you're just starting. I don't know if you're coming from the UK where they don't really play fantasy games and the scoring's different. I mean, there's quite a bit to learn. And I don't know. I assume people have tried and lost, but I'm not sure. Yeah, you think it would be bigger.
Yeah, I pulled up the prizes. It's like first place gets a bit of stuff. There's like a 7-night break somewhere. I don't know, a bunch of experiences, travel. And then you get to like fifth place, a copy of FIFA 23, a speaker, a jacket, a goodie bag. Yeah. Like this is fifth place out of 8 million. And people
like worse than like the set of steak knives on DraftKings for ninth place.
Right. You got like monthly prizes, weekly prizes. But I mean, again, that's like a copy of FIFA, a ball, a speaker, a mug. So it's like, okay, you beat 8 million people. Here's your FPL mug. Congrats.
Right. Like, yeah, just doesn't make sense to me.
All right. So let's, before we get into some questions, I wanted to just discuss, you know, the 100,000, because we haven't had a show since you won that 100,000. And so this was King of the Pitch, in which you had 8 entries, if I remember correctly. You had the full 8 entries. That's the max in the contest. If you're watching here on YouTube, I put up some incorrect prices because I couldn't find them because Rafinha is now in Barcelona, so that was no longer on the cheat sheet. But Ryan was saying he was around 7,000, not the 10,000 I wrote down, and Meslier was around 4,300 or so. But I have his lineup on here. So just kind of, I guess we can, I mean, loosely talk about it again. This was, you know, the 10 games final day slate that happened 2 months ago. So it's maybe not too fresh in our memory, but like we have the TAA, we have the Cedric, you know, I guess you won it on the Reece James assist, which was maybe happened in stoppage time for Chelsea. But just looking at your forwards, you went with Kane, you went with Wilson. So, you know, 2 goal scorers. What was, I guess, maybe not okay, so, thinking, but yeah, go through it here.
I could probably do a whole podcast or take up a whole podcast for this, but so yeah, like you said, Rafinha, I think was 6,900 and yeah, Meslier was 43. So other than that, the prices are right. But so I had 8 lineups and I first like tried to come up with a core, I guess, of who I thought were the best plays on the slate, just because it was tough. You know, you had City and Liverpool in pretty good spots and they both needed to win going for the title. Arsenal and Chelsea didn't really have anything to play for, but they were big favorites against Watford and Arsenal against Everton, who had, you know, just secured, you know, staying up in the Prem. And then Tottenham against Watford needed to win to be in the Champions League. So basically all 5 of the top teams were in pretty good spots. Rafinha probably had the most motivation on the slate. You know, Leeds were facing relegation against Brentford. And 6,900 for Rafinha, it was a price thing. You know, I felt most confident about him. 6,900 was just too cheap. He had been coming close to scoring for like a month. You know, he hit the the post three times, I remember, on free kicks, maybe in the last 3 weeks before that. He's taking penalties. He's taking sets. I mean, you know he's playing 90 minutes, and he's just too cheap. So, like, Rafinha I felt comfortable with. Like, and then Callum Wilson, too. Cheap forward was tough. If you remember, Callum Wilson and Newcastle were playing against Barnes, Ashley Barnes, and Burnley, who needed to win. And I remember we talked about on that pod, couldn't believe that Newcastle and Dubravka were cheaper than Burnley and Barnes. Like, and Barnes and Wilson were the same price. I couldn't imagine playing Barnes. I mean, Newcastle were flying, scoring goals. Wilson had just scored against Arsenal. You know, they just beat Arsenal 3-0. I just figured I felt better about Wilson. You know, I couldn't go down with Ashley Barnes. There were other cheap forwards too, though. Like, Ronaldo didn't start, so Cavani was the same price, and some people went there. And then Leeds had a bunch of cheap forwards too, all in that range. I think Leeds had three guys in that range, Rodrigo, Greenwood, somebody else. But yeah, and then Trent was too cheap too. Like, with eight lineups, it's tough because, like, do you want to lock all these guys in? That seems like pretty risky. You know, I know, like, I talked about it with Jordan. He would have had a totally opposite take than me. Like, me coming up with ownership percentages on my core was like the toughest part, because I think one of the reasons why I've had the success I've had in soccer is because I go heavier on ownership than pretty much anybody. I mean, the slates where I'm playing 20 or 30 lineups, I have multiple players at 100% ownership on most of those slates. This one was tough. So Trent's just too cheap. Like, you got to play him. And then Cedric too. Like, Cedric's cheap. He's taking corners, and it just, like, lets you pay up for all these guys. So if I said a core four was Rafinha, Callum Wilson, Trent, and Cedric, and then I was just trying to mix in, like, Kane, De Bruyne, I decided to fade the City and Liverpool guys because I just didn't want to guess. And I thought Tottenham and Arsenal were more likely to maybe just put up four or five, with those games not meaning anything and the City-Liverpool games being maybe kind of cagey. So I only played De Bruyne out of City and Liverpool. But anyways, just as far as making these lineups, I went back and forth many times. I came up, you know, okay. So I've never won more, prior to this King of the Pitch win, I've never won more than 15,000 on a slate. I don't max enter. There's not too many opportunities for, like, a huge score. This King of the Pitch, I mean, I had eight entries, and it was bigger than the last two King of the Pitches. The entries were worth more. There was double the prize pool, I believe. So this is like a big opportunity once a year. I don't know if King of the Pitch is going to be that big going forward. The qualifiers were overlaying towards the end. So, like, yeah, I guess, how am I going to play it? Am I really going to jam all these guys and a couple of them bust and I'm just dead? It feels like incredibly stupid, but I also didn't want to, like, go away from what got me there. So I made some lineups on Thursday morning. Then we did the podcast on Friday. You know, talking to Jordan, obviously he's got a little bit of a different strategy when it comes to this stuff. And I probably would too if it wasn't soccer. But a lot of what soccer is still is predicting who's going to score the goals. And I've been pretty good at picking who's going to score the goals, finding the right spots. So then after that podcast, I switched all eight of my lineups again. And then Saturday morning, I switched all eight again. Saturday morning is when I decided that I was going to play my best chalk and then try to come up with some low owned guys. And I decided on Odegaard and Martinelli. I think Odegaard, what did he end up being? 4%.
Odegaard is 4%. Yep.
4%. Yeah. So he was the key. And, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, so that made it a little bit easier. They were also cheaper. Like, if you take the attacking players from Arsenal, Spurs, City, all the top five, Liverpool, Odegaard was the cheapest of all of them. And you could say, yeah, he's not a forward, but that total had been creeping up. I mean, it was going up Thursday. It was going up Friday. Arsenal's total was high on Saturday. Like, it just seemed like they were going to smash Everton. Like, that was a spot. Arsenal with nothing to play for, perfect. Everton, you know, a huge comeback to stay up. So, yeah, I decided I was going to roll with Arsenal for my low-owned guys. This lineup right here. So, okay, so then I'll fast forward a little bit. 15 minutes left before lock. I've got Rafinha, Callum, Trent, and Cedric on at least six of my eight lineups, all four of those guys. Seems kind of nuts. 75% on all those guys. Like, you're going to throw a lot of chances away if something goes wrong. And they're all going to be chalky. So, like, I'm really going to play these chalky guys and not, like, just make some, I don't know, some game stacks or some more leveraged lineups. So I got a little bit nervous and panicked a little bit, took Callum Wilson out. So I ended up with four, took a Rafinha out. I also had three Odegaard and three Martinelli, and I took one of each of them out. And actually one lineup that I took out with about 10 minutes to go would have beat my lineup that won. It's possible I would have got first and second. I just thought I'd throw that in there. The lineup I took out, it had KDB instead of Kane, Martinelli instead of Reece James, and Palace's keeper instead of Meslier. So, like, yeah, Kane outscored KDB, but only by, like, I don't remember, five or something. Martinelli outscored Reece by, like, double digits. Mm. That lineup would have done better. But, yeah, anyways, I know that was rambling. I could have, like, done a whole pod on how I came up, but it was tough. I don't know. I'm glad it went the way it did. Basically, in the end, I just decided that I had to play a similar way to what got me here, basically.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple points here. So you're currently the number one ranked soccer player at Roto Grinders, and like I feel like your strategy, the way you play, is different than, I mean, I'm not looking at the leaderboard, but a good portion of the people on the leaderboard. Like, you're talking about Rafinha having, you know, hit the post in recent matches, and how well these guys actually play. Like, a lot of people on the leaderboard don't actually watch soccer. You know, they just put numbers. Maybe they watch soccer, but, you know, they're just putting numbers in the spreadsheets. So, like, I think you already kind of separate yourself because you're actually watching these games. You know how these teams play. So I think that stands out at least. But just in terms of that slate, like, I think you got that Reece James assist, and he was sub 20%. So that definitely.
Oh, yeah. Helped. I'm glad you brought up Reece James. So, that was my only Reece James lineup. He almost lost it for me. Even with that assist, he's my lowest scoring guy. And I mean, he was 7K. So, like, trust me, I didn't want to play three defenders, but, you know, we've seen Reece score braces. And so I had Trent and Cedric, who are, like, you know, too good of plays based on the price. So they, like, almost don't count. So I was thinking of Reece more as, like, a midfielder. You know, it was against Watford, and I wanted at least one exposure or at least one Reece James. You know, man, I would have been kicking myself if Reece went off and I have eight lineups with and didn't play him. It would have been brutal. So, yeah, I'm glad it worked out like that. You know, it was tough deciding which lineups to go with. You know, going back to, like, the Callum Wilson thing, why I decided, like, on just Callum. Like, am I really going to make the same lineup and just switch Callum for Barnes? Like, that seems a little crazy, too. Like, because that's what I would do if it was, like, a main – or if it was, like, a normal tournament, if I had 20 lineups or something. You know, I'd be making the same lineup, one with Callum, one with Barnes. I'd be, you know, doing stuff like that. But, yeah, I just had to pick, you know, go with – you just take stands, I guess, so I could switch up things elsewhere.
Yeah, just looking at the final leaderboard. So you beat second place by about 6 points, and then third place by about 9 points. You beat fifth place by almost 20 points. So, you know,
that's pretty crazy with all that chalk I had, right, too. Like, you know, it's not like – because there's 10 games, so the ownership didn't get too out of hand, but – I mean, Callum was the popular punt. Rafinha was popular. Obviously, Kane, you know.
Callum was actually only 20%. I thought he'd actually be higher, but Callum was 20%. So
yeah, you're right.
I wonder what actually Barnes' percentage was, because I was on your train of, you know, why are we going
Barnes with was Barnes? You know, I believe he was like 10, so like half okay. of Callum, but it was yeah. the fact that Cavani started, so he took a little bit, and those yeah. Leeds guys took a little bit too.
Yeah, I was like you had the Crystal Palace keeper, whether it was Guaita or Butland or whoever. I was all about Crystal Palace keeping Manchester United scoreless in that game. They ended up winning 1-0, or maybe it was a scoreless yeah. draw, whatever. But
I'll say something else. Sorry, no, go ahead.
Finish. No, I wasn't. No, this is your show, man. You go ahead.
Yeah. So some people might remember. You probably remember on the podcast. I like made a point about how Calvin Phillips was just like a lock of a cash play. He yeah. was like 3,400 or something, you know, and we talked about Leeds having the motivation. Well, people made a big mistake, and a lot of sharp people too, because Calvin was like 30% in that King of the Pitch. I mean, I can't imagine doing that. Like you need, I get it. Like, you know, it could have worked. You could have made a lineup where, like, I don't know, he scores 5 points and you still win, but
you still need more than that.
Goals in all those spots. You have to play players who can score 2 goals in all those spots. I mean, like, now I used a couple punts like that, but I used Saul for Chelsea, who was playing in center mid, and it was against Watford. So I felt like there was quite a bit more upside there. But yeah, it helped that all those people, a ton of people used Calvin Phillips. I was pretty surprised by that. But maybe I shouldn't be, because people are still making quite a bit of mistakes similar to that, even in the higher stakes tournaments. I don't know, like, how much I want to get into it, but yeah, I see people playing defensive mids at util, center backs at util, and basically just not going for enough upside all the time.
Yeah, the Calvin Phillips strategy is interesting if you're trying to win 100,000. Like, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure right. he's the guy to do it. So,
and I gotta say, like, in, you know, I said I built new lineups Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning. I had some Calvin Phillips at the start. Like, it's a process to figure out where you're going wrong, like if it's a mistake or not. Yeah.
All right, I think that's good for the winner there. We got some questions we got to get into. Well, we already talked about this one. I wrote this down about why people should play DFS instead of FPL, and we discussed that. So,
just for that, I like that specific question, because you can win way more money. That's number one. Okay, number two is the slates end in 1 day. There's a new one the next day. You don't have to wait the whole season. What if your FPL lineup's dead after a month? That's the worst. And most of them are. I mean, yeah, I could go on, but there's a lot of good reasons. Yeah, someone was asking about, like, XG. And if I use XG, and if I use models and projections, and in a way I do. But the answer for soccer is no. I've never looked at a projection. I think it's very hard for soccer. I don't use an optimizer. I don't use, you know, I'm not looking at individual XG numbers all the time, but I would be if I didn't watch the games. Now, I've watched these games for a long time. I mean, I've been watching the Premier League for like 20 years, but playing DFS for the last 5 or so and watching all these games, I feel like I have a pretty good XG in my head, at least for most teams and most players. You know, even the games that I don't watch, I'm watching the extended highlights, and I'm following, you know, I'm following the XG as the games are going to, if I'm checking stats. But yeah, it is important, especially if you don't watch the games. Like, from a team perspective, like Wolves the last 2 years, they had a higher XG and they weren't, you know, scoring many goals. And consequently, people don't want to play them. They end up thinking, you know, Wolves sucks, you know, their prices come down. And so people aren't playing them and they're cheap. But, you know, the Premier League ebbs and flows. Like,
all of these major sports do. And that's the perfect time to jump on these teams. Like, I couldn't believe some of the ownership on Wolves. I mean, I know it was a showdown slate, but I won the Wolves Arsenal showdown with Heechan, and he was the cheapest attacking player by a mile. He was like 4K or something and 3% owned. The season before, it was Brighton. They weren't scoring goals, but they were playing decent. It's a long season. So, yeah, you want to look for those spots. As far as players go, yeah, XG is important for that too. I remember Briel Embolo in the Italian league for Atalanta. He underperformed his XG by more than anyone in the league. And, you know, some people would say like, oh, he sucks, so don't play him. But I mean, those are the exact guys that I'm looking to play. I mean, you're not investing in, you know, a guy like that for the whole season. He just needs to perform to his XG one time. Like a couple seasons before, Zaha didn't score that many goals. I don't remember. Maybe he only scored like 4 or 5 goals one season, but he'd actually hit the post more than any other player in the league. I think it was like 6 times. And some goalies made some pretty good saves, you know, all the stuff that increases XG. And he played for a bad team too. So the next season, you know, Palace got just a little bit better. Zaha scoring tons of goals again. And people just get off players so easily. The same thing kind of happened with Rafinha, like we sort of mentioned. You know, his price keeps falling. You know, Leeds aren't playing well. He's not scoring goals. But he could have been scoring goals. So, I mean, opportunities like that will come up throughout the season. So, yeah, I am looking at XG, but I don't have a model. Never looked at a model. I don't I have an XG in my head. So if you don't watch the games, yeah, XG is huge. You could use it for something like maybe cheap center midfielders. Yeah, it just any you're looking for low owned goals to win these tournaments. And like I'm trying to think of a player. Maybe like, yeah, I don't know. It'd just be a guess, but like a Jacob Ramsey at the start of last season when he came and scored those goals. You know, if you've been watching the games, you'd see that he was in the box all the time. He was, you know, getting on the end of stuff. He had a lot of good chances to score. So you knew it was coming. And then when it does come, those guys are like 4% owned and you win a tournament. So, yeah, I'm paying attention to that stuff. What's up, dude?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm currently going off the internet on my phone. There's currently a vote for like fiber in my town, and Comcast seems like they just cut the internet off on me. So
wow, that's annoying.
So I'm here. So we got this XG one figured out. I figured you didn't really use a certain model just based off the way you talk, but
no, like I just yeah, like Saramek and Redcoats. Well, I don't know about Redcoats. I shouldn't lump them together, but I would assume they do a similar thing. You know, Saramek does everything by model. I don't think he makes any decisions that aren't based on that. You know, projecting the outcome, ceilings, floors, all that kind of stuff. You know, yeah. If you have a model as good as his, maybe it would work. But soccer is very, very tough for that. Like just looking at projections, it's a tough sport to project when something like a goal is just worth so much more than anything else.
Yeah, if you have Saramek's model, then you're good to go.
You're right. Pretty
so
much.
There you go. That's all you need.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, the next one. So what factors do you run through when constructing lineups for two game slates? I believe this comes from Jack B. I want to say he's one of our followers, mentioned this in Discord, but he often does full defense plus a goalkeeper stack. How do you optimize if there are no clean sheets, script it out like a showdown? What are your thoughts here?
Yeah. I really like two game slates. Yeah. And they're much different than bigger slates. Up until the end of last season, I'd had much more success on 2 and 3 game slates. Stacking full defense plus keeper. Yeah. You know, I'm going to say this for a lot of stuff, but of course everything is slate dependent, but just in general, yes, you want to script like a showdown. You want to script both games and make lineups that are going to fit that. Absolutely. And you're not really doing that on 6-game slates. Also on these 2-game slates, similar to showdowns, floors are going to be more important most of the time. You know, unless you have, I don't know, City or Liverpool where they might score 4 or 5 goals or something. But yeah, so floors are going to be more important. I mean, there's plenty of slates where 2-game slate, I'm going to start my team with like the 3 or 4 set piece takers and just go from there. And then just try to find like a low own goal somewhere, or a low own brace somewhere. But this guy's specific question, full defense. I do like the full defense stack, but again, like, and you can do it with sometimes 3, play one at util too. Like you might play the wing backs and a center back. You go for everything. Yes, that definitely works. I like that strategy. But I've also been playing keepers with no defenders. Like that works too. You got to be open to that. Like one of the things with keeper, I especially started changing some things last season and just realizing more that it doesn't matter quite as much. Obviously, we know how random it is. I'm not necessarily always trying to pair defenders with my keeper anymore. I'll play a keeper with no defenders from that team. It can happen like a lot of time, like on a smaller slate, you might want to play the huge favorite keeper, the City keeper, the Liverpool keeper. And we had Tottenham on a bunch of these smaller slates, Hugo Lloris. But sometimes their center backs are all over 4K. So you're not going to do that. Just play a $2,500 center back from any team. I mean, a lot of times you need to fill the 3-team requirement as well. Let's see. Oh, yeah, another thing. Speaking of Saramek, Jordan noticed that he was like the first guy to start doing this last year. He was playing defenders from teams opposite of his forward. So instead of like trying to target the clean sheet, he was playing the defender opposite of whatever forward he was playing. I mean, on the opposite team. So like hopefully that forward scores and then the wing back on the other team chases the game. You know, I know I'm just rambling here. Leicester were on a lot of slates, I remember, a lot of these smaller slates on Sunday at the end of the year. I played a lot of Schmeichel, but I think it's a mistake to be, at least it was last year, to be pairing him with their wingbacks, like, or not wingbacks, their fullbacks, like a Luke Thomas or like whoever it was. Guys that don't really do much and are overpriced. Like, I don't know, if Tottenham was on that slate too, I'd probably rather play Reguillon or Royale, even with Schmeichel, over Leicester's, you know, fullbacks. So it's all slate dependent. Like, you don't want to go for a clean sheet over a defender that's a better play. Like, if there's a Trent or any of these guys that take set pieces, Reece James, Digne, I mean, especially on smaller slates, those guys are just in my lineup. Like, worry about the rest later. I don't know. Just rambling. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I was just trying to think of like a four team.
Yeah. So,
no, go ahead. Here, Crystal Palace. I guess we can throw Everton in there. Maybe Leeds to an extent, just like four teams where like you don't have a TAA, you don't have Cancelo, these guys who you always put in your lineups. What if would the full stack in that situation be more beneficial?
Yeah. And in that case, like, that's when you might play a center back too, like a cheap center back if the opportunity cost isn't there at defense. But like on these smaller slates, especially, you can do things with lineup construction to win tournaments. With lineup construction and pricing, it's kind of going to be hard for me to talk about this without a slate, but you can, like, you know, like, evaluate pricing ranges. Like, there might not be, you know, some slates there's going to be good 4K mids, good 5K mids, or, you know, that whole like mid range. I don't know. Okay. Tottenham was on a lot of Sunday slates, and Son and Kane are very expensive. And sometimes there's good defenders on that slate too. So you can't play everybody, and you can let, I guess, other things dictate who you're gonna play. Like, there was a slate last year where Son, he was like 11K or something, and he was the highest scorer on the slate, the highest overall point total on the slate. I think it was like 20 or something. You know, other guys had maybe 17, 18, so it was close, but he's not on the winner. And I mean, that happens. Look, like, a lot of times, you know, if you jam Son and Kane, you're gonna have to punt defense. But if Reguilon and Royale put up 10 each, like, that's a big, big hole to climb out of. So sometimes I'll like force things on two game slates where I'll say, like, I'm going to play, you know, these few guys, and assuming they score X number of points, you can't afford some of the other guys. So it makes your decisions easier. I mean, it's not really a good explanation, but yeah, I guess just the moral of the story is that they're different than big slates, and you can win them in different ways. You can win them with construction and pricing, and you can't really do that on big slates.
Right. All right. What do we get next? So we got this new sub rule. Previously, three subs in the Premier League. I'm not sure what other leagues actually have this, but I know five subs has been a thing for other leagues. But so how often do you think, I guess, substitutes appear in an optimal lineup, and how likely is it to increase as we're going to five subs? Do you think subs are over or under utilized at the moment? I mean, you just won, you know, the Euro Women's with a substitute. So
yeah. Okay.
Is there five subs in Euros actually? As I talk about this?
There was.
Okay.
Yeah, there was.
Well, there you go.
So yeah, people are playing subs now. I think, like, in some scenarios, they're even like overutilized. I remember, like, I started talking about subs a little bit way back on podcasts with Andrew, and we talked about it, you know, last year a few times, and people are just doing it now. But there are still certain situations where I think it's like optimal, like, not just like taking a chance, like the best thing to do. I'll talk about just this, the women's slate that I won. I hope some people that are listening were following the Euros, because it was England. It was an England slate. They were huge favorites, minus 2000, maybe even minus 2500, like massive favorites. Okay. And their front three, they were all like 10K. The cheapest of their front three was 90 some hundred. And I didn't even think, I thought they would just rest their front three. Like, I couldn't believe, like, and I think most people thought that too. They had nothing to play for. So they started the same front three though. And their backup center forward, Alessia Russo, was 5K, which is like, you know, she's arguably better than Ellen White, their starter. I mean, I think she is, but just, it doesn't matter who she is. She's 5K. She came on and scored the game before. She came on in the game before that. Like, she's for sure going to come on. So the number one thing you want to think of is like, you got to make sure your sub's going to come on. Like, it's rare that I play a sub, you know, maybe in showdown, but like, if I'm not like sure they're going to come on, or you're just wasting a lineup. But just think about this. So England have nothing to play for. They start all these 10K forwards. You mentioned the five subs. You got to think a few of them are getting subbed at half. I mean, it's what happens in these tournaments all the time. That's what I was thinking. Now they're minus 2,500 favorites. So if I can get a 5K forward on that team for just even 30 minutes, even 20 minutes, and you can get them at like very little ownership because they're a sub, like, it's hard not to call them the best play on the slate. Like, I could show you, I had text messages with my brother. I said Russo's a lock, just those exact words, like a sub. And then what, we finished 1 through 4 and Russo was on all of those lineups. So it doesn't always work out. I'll give another example from last year. There was a Champions League slate. You'll remember Sheriff Tiraspol and Real Madrid. So this was the second game. I think after Sheriff beat them, Madrid were huge favorites, obviously. And like, all their forwards were injured. So there was like talk of Luka Jovic getting a start. He was 3,500. He didn't start, and it was Benzema. But, you know, it's against Sheriff. They don't have, like, he's the only attacker on the bench. I knew he was going to come on. I'll take 20 minutes. It's the price. It's the price. You know, if these guys, if he's 6K, 7K, I mean, never. But 3,500. Think of the defensive midfielders you're playing in your lineup for that price. I mean, you would much rather have 20 minutes of a forward on a favorite. I mean, goals, it's often easier to score goals in the last 20 minutes of a game too than it is at the start. And then you get the ownership. So yeah, like, playing subs can be just extremely optimal, but people are playing them a lot now. In the showdown slate after that, I believe Russo was 9%. She came off the bench and scored again. But yeah, so back to how, now that there's more subs, yeah, what does more subs change? Five subs? Yeah, it's not great. You know, I don't love it. It's one more thing to think about. I think take like a little bit of a wait and see approach, see how teams are using them. You know, hopefully it doesn't change that much. But if you have teams that are using them a lot and subbing people at half, and like, now there's players that used to play 90 minutes that are getting subbed, like, yeah, pay attention to that stuff. 90 minutes is going to be very important.
Yeah, so Ryan, I thought about this for 10 seconds before the show. And so your strategy of usually paying up for defenders, do you think it's going to be more beneficial to actually pay up for defenders because they're less likely to be subbed off? Just in general, like, you usually have, you know, midfielders, forwards, guys who are subbed off before defenders. So now we still have the TAAs, the Cancelos, Robertson's, all these guys who, sure, maybe they'll get subbed off here and there, but probably more likely to go full 90s than I guess even guys like De Bruyne and stuff like that. So
yeah, no,
do you
yeah.
think it's more beneficial even for your already defensive strategy?
Yeah, I think there are certain situations where, yeah, it could play out exactly like you said. So yeah, it would be more beneficial. Yeah, there will be like, you know, not necessarily KDB, but there will be, you know, expensive midfielders who take sets that, yeah, are getting subbed earlier. There'll be otherwise chalky players, like players who who I don't know might have been. Yeah, I don't know. I guess is the answer. They'll be you can take more chance. You might be able to take more chances fading some chalk if you know there's more of a chance that said chalk is only going to play 60 minutes. And there's certain teams where, you know, their monopoly set piece taker, you might play him if he's going to play 75, 80 minutes. But if they're getting subbed at like 60 now, yeah, this is just like, yeah, I'm going to be factoring all this in, pay attention to how these teams are using their subs.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter as much for a KDB because, you know, he can play 45 minutes and still hit value. So maybe it doesn't matter as much for him. But I'm thinking maybe like the Ryan Fraziers, instead of playing 80 minutes, maybe he's going 70 minutes. Maybe for the people who like playing, I don't know, Joe Moutinho, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even James Madison, who, you know, he's had injuries past few years. He's the guy who maybe he'll be sub more, especially early in the season here. We're going to have busier, even without European UEFA matches, we're going to have midweek matches leading up to the World Cup. So, all this stuff kind of goes into the equation, more subs, more matches. So,
It'll be something it'll definitely be something to monitor. I mean, mm-hmm. but you know, hopefully we're sort of just overblowing it too, because you know, you have plenty of teams and managers out there who
don't want to,
even with three subs, just use one most of the time. So like, you know, it's going to be team dependent and
We had another question based off of the subs here. Malik in our chat here, would you ever play a sub in a single entry contest?
I wouldn't rule it out. It'd have to be like I got to bring up that Russo play, but I actually thought Russo was the best play on the slate, like basically a lock. So it'd have to be a play like that. I mean, like think of City against the worst team in the league, and you know, whoever their backup forward is 3,500. Could you play that in a single entry?
Well,
I say yes.
City's backup forward ever be 3,500 though?
Maybe, you know, they just put him in this Julian Alvarez from River that they got from Argentina. He's 3,500. You know, he's got a chance to get like 20 minutes going against, you know, I don't know, whoever. You know, maybe is the answer, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it depends.
Again, though, like these are not spots that come up often.
Right.
I want to clarify
3,500 Manchester City player.
Subs are playable in showdowns most of the time. But in GPPs, subs are rarely playable. Like, you might get three opportunities all year to play a sub in a GPP, like profitably. It's something I almost never look for. I mean, like, it's very rare.
All right. Next one we got. This was Skyler asked this earlier this morning. How big do you think the biggest World Cup prize pool is going to be on DraftKings?
Oh man, this is a tough one.
I suggested 200,000 because we've seen the 100,000s in Champions League in that final day. But I mean, maybe that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. So World Cup being in the winter, I don't know if that's good. And being in Qatar, I don't know if that's great either. I don't know what times these games are going to start. I'm not the guy that has an answer for this. I was thinking 150, like, you know, we've seen 150 a couple times and I'd be happy with that. 200 would be great. I think we might get a couple of those big contests, but
especially like USA England and maybe that
two kind of that game for sure. But when they do have these big contests, you know, they're probably going to overlay. So I mean, take some chances on these big contests. There's not going to be that many of them. And they will probably overlay too. I mean, that's just my guess. And then they'll disappear. So there's not going to be that many opportunities.
Yeah, the times, I guess the main benefit in Qatar is that the times aren't that crazy. I think the England, actually all USA games are at 2:00.
Oh, that's great.
Unless I'm reading this incorrectly and the times aren't out yet. But
you know, I don't know. Yeah, you know, we could, you know, it depends. I think DraftKings, and I don't know if they
Sorry, I think it's 8 a.m. So this is Eastern, 8 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. So.
Okay. So, we're going to have some games starting at 7 a.m., I think. Yeah. Those slates will be tough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I hope so. I don't know. You know, it's impossible to predict, but, like, hopefully DraftKings reached out or will reach out to, like, and I don't know how they would do this, but I think they do this. Like, hopefully they reach out to the awesome-o types, those guys that play 150 lineups but don't normally play soccer. Hopefully they make somewhat of an effort to get those big players into the World Cup, at least for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. We got another question here in the chat from DFS Chan. What does your soccer DFS bankroll management look like heading into the EPL season?
That's a tough question. Well, mine's a little different now after winning King of the Pitch.
You got to think about this still. Are you going to be entering a little more than you have in the past?
Yeah, sometimes, but it's not going to be anything crazy. Like, yeah, this is another something I'm not sure of and a topic we could spend a lot of time on, but you know, I normally play about 20 lineups or so. There'll probably be some tournaments where I might play 30, I don't know, maybe 40. I don't know. Like if should I be max entering 150? I mean, that's a conversation if Saramek or Redcoats or Moneyball or those guys who 150, if they, you know, if they saw my results from entering 20 lineups, I'd be leaving money on the table, not putting in 150, but I don't know. Like, you need an optimizer for that.
And yeah. Though your hand writing all these manually. So it's a little different.
I don't really do that. So yeah, anyways, soccer DFS bankroll management, what did it used to look like? I would take the biggest risks on soccer because that was my best sport. So, and I think I take a little bit more risk than most people. So, you know, obviously it's different for everybody. I don't have a good answer for that. If soccer is your best DFS sport, then that's where you should focus on. I don't know. I don't have a good answer. Sorry.
Yeah. For me, I found that the most beneficial thing to me is single entry contests. I do, you know, some of the smaller ones, but that just seems to work out more in my favor than like if you're single entry, double entry, or sorry, one entry or two entries into like the big contest, the big 100K contest.
Yeah, no, I'm glad
that,
you said
that's
that.
Almost impossible to win.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it comes down to. That's why I kind of favor the single entries personally.
You're right, actually. If you're just like, yeah. It's better to play single entries than if you're just going to maybe put two lineups into the main GPP or even four lineups into the main GPP. Yeah. You probably are better off playing single entries. You're right. You want to keep a bankroll for the whole season. So like, you know, my bankroll was low at a time. I grinded up from nothing, playing soccer. And then, yeah, I was focused more on the smaller field stuff for sure.
Yeah. I don't know how many times where, you know, I have one or two entries into the main contest and I felt like, you know, pretty good lineup, almost perfect lineup, but it's like, oh, you finished 40th.
Yeah. Most of the time, if you're only making two lineups, you're probably not going to come up with the lineup that's going to win.
Right.
Like a lot of times you need to take more risk and it's pretty tough to do that if you only have two lineups. You know, I'm making 20, 30 lineups so I can take big risks on some of those lineups. And the way to win these, I mean, the biggest, like this is every DFS sport basically. And the way to win these tournaments, it usually works out this way, is the people willing to take the most risk are the ones who usually get the biggest reward. It's hard to do that with one or two lineups, like taking a chance on, you know, guys that suck, guys in bad spots. You know, if you're playing properly, you're going to lose a lot of times. Like, you're going to lose a lot of times, especially if you're playing like me, who goes so hard on ownership. I mean, I blank slates. I have 30 lineups and full blank slates all the time. So, I mean, can you stomach that? But that's also how you win, because like when my core hits, I have 8 chances at first place. I don't just have like 20 different lineups and like hopefully one of them gets there.
Right.
I was going to say that about the small 2-game slates too. Go heavier on ownership. Whoever the best plays are, just play them in all, you know, if you know who the best plays are. I know that's easier said than done, but just play them in all your lineups. Seriously, there's always another slate the next day. You want to give yourself a good chance to win when your core hits. And another thing about those 2-game, those 3-game slates, and obviously this is true for the bigger ones too, you don't need the nuts. I can't believe how many times the nuts doesn't win these 2-game slates. I'm shocked. It happens more often than not. So you don't need to worry about that necessarily either.
Furthering this, Malik is asking, what percentage of your weekly bankroll goes towards GPP, single entry, cash games? I don't think you play cash games. So
no, I wish I could answer these for you, Malik, but 100% of my bankroll goes towards GPPs. But that's like, I think probably the smaller stakes cash games, there's still quite a bit of edge, but I just can't justify it. Like, I'm pretty confident I would be like a winning player in cash games, at least the lower stakes, but I'm looking for a bigger payoff, and like how tilted I would be from like losing cash, it would like makes me not want to play it. Yeah. Like the times where I lose cash, I'll be just like so tilted that like even if I win money in the long run, it wouldn't be worth it. I don't know. Like, where are you having success, or like, what are your goals? If this is like your only bankroll and you need to grind it up, and you might not be able to play again if you bust, then maybe you should focus most of your money on cash until you build a bankroll. If you're a winning player, if you're someone that you know can deposit sort of whenever they want, and if you lose, like it's okay. Then play GPPs, man. You need to hit a big score, and then, you know, you're off and running.
You just mentioned your core plays. How many players do you think are typically in your core? I'd say about 4, just based off the 100,000 that you won. You mentioned the 4 players that you had. Is that kind of what you're usually floating with, 4 players?
Yeah, well, it's definitely different, but yeah, about that. Like, if there's a Trent or a Reece James, or there's usually one or two defenders that are way better than the field. Like my favorite slates are when I think there's 2 defenders that stand out, like just 2. So I'm playing those 2 on every lineup. It's just so easy. Then I can do whatever I want with the rest of the stuff. And KDB is another one like that. This last season was just crazy. If you look at KDB's game log, it's crazy. I mean, he's putting up 25 every single week, and Alexander Arnold too, every single week. So like until the prices on these guys change, like they're just not really hurting your lineups. Like I understand that they're chalk, but I'm convinced that soccer plays a little bit differently than these other DFS sports. Like I'm trying to jam the best chalk, like when it's a sure thing. And I feel like in soccer, there are some sure things sometimes. Is that De Bruyne?
This is De Bruyne, yep.
So like there's a 5-point game right there. Oh, that was Champs League Atletico Madrid. Okay, well that's a little bit different. And that other one was Champs League too. So
yeah.
if you just look at the Prem, like he basically never lost a slate for you. Like, I mean, and he was like, he's in the winning lineup in almost all of those.
You had to go back to like at Arsenal January 1st to when he didn't hit double digits.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. And like Trent was similar, but like, I'm trying to, you know, I want to have the least decisions as possible, you know, when I can, a lot of times. And if you have these guys that are like sort of like free squares, and again, like this started for me kind of because I didn't play any cash. And like way back in the day, like if I just played like my best core, the GPPs weren't, the lobby wasn't nearly as sharp. And like you could have an off day and still make money in GPPs, especially if like all the best plays were in your core. It doesn't really work like that anymore. But yeah, so of my 20 lineups, how many players? Yeah, probably four. A forward, a midfielder, and hopefully two defenders. Maybe just three, like a defender, a midfielder, and a forward. Yeah. Half the players usually. But so now we're on that. One thing I'm going to try to do this year, though, is, so I go 100% on ownerships a lot of times. I'm going to try to cut that down to 90 in certain spots this year, in more spots, even with guys like KDB and with Trent, just because I want those couple lineups where, you know, if the rest of my core hits, I'd hate to, you know, you'd hate to have
just in case.
Yeah. So, but in, like 90% is still a huge ownership stand. So like, I keep trying to tell myself that you don't need to go full 100. I'm going to try to switch it up a little bit more.
So this next one, I'm just double checking to see if I wrote it down correctly. But just your lineups for, well, this is smaller slates, larger slates. I guess it's, so it'd be like the main GPP versus, smaller yeah. entry GPPs. Yeah. Do you use the same lineups for that?
No. Yeah. You don't, in the smaller stuff. In the smaller stuff, typically you don't need as high of a score to win.
Those are closer to like cash lineups, would you say?
Definitely. Okay. And like, yeah. So like if I put, yes, that's a good thing to bring up. Like, I play the high stakes tournament every week too. Some it's like a 275, sometimes it's a 555. I'm putting a similar lineup that I would put in cash in those tournaments. You don't need as high of a score. Like I look for one or two guys that have a little bit more upside, but you can get away with, you know, somebody scoring 4 points, a center defensive mid or a center back scoring 2 points. But yeah, you can't get away with that in the main GPP. So yeah, definitely there's a difference.
Yeah. All right. We got, so just general showdown strategy. When do you captain goalkeepers? When is it best to captain the popular set piece takers, i.e. Alexander Arnold, De Bruyne, all the main guy's son, I know you've talked about in the past of how it's usually best not to captain the most popular player, find maybe, the opposite team goal scorer, that kind of a thing, or obviously depends what kind of route you want to go with. But how often do you go with the goalkeepers, and how often do you end up captaining like a TAA kind of a thing? Depends, I guess. I guess that's
yeah, definitely depends. Goalkeepers in general, I'm over the field. They become more popular as the years have gone on. It used to be like just a huge edge playing keeper in showdown. Like it was the biggest edge like 3 years ago.
I lost all my goalkeeper edge last year. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. So now a lot of people are doing it. I still play a lot of keepers. I still like to captain them. As far as when, that's a good question. Well, for one, if you need the salary,
I would say it's almost like when the implied goal total is like three, not when you have like a Burnley against, whoever, another team that's not going to score against Wolves. Like, cause then that's when the goalkeepers are, you know, higher up 30% kind of a thing. If you have the teams actually score and that game, one of those guys gets a clean sheet, I think that's kind of more of a benefit there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's slate dependent. So, man, I have like a million thoughts going through my head. So, yeah, if it's a team like Burnley. Now, I know what you're saying, but it's also like sometimes there's not a lot of floor points in that game, and there might not be a lot of goals in that game. So the amount of players out there that can outscore a keeper really like aren't that many. The keepers end up like optimal quite a bit. They can even be like the highest scoring overall player in those games. So yeah, for those games that are going to end 1-0, I mean, you want a keeper captain. Another spot is like, think of City or Liverpool, where all their forwards are expensive. And you need like a cheaper, at least somewhat cheaper captain to fit all of these guys. It doesn't even matter like if the goalkeeper scores only 10 or 12 points, if the construction, right, if the construction is right, it can work. Like your goalie doesn't have to be your captain doesn't have to be the highest scorer. I know I talk about this. Your captain doesn't have to be the highest scorer for the lineup to be optimal. When is it best to captain popular set piece takers? This is one that I actually think I've struggled a bit with, because I tend to not captain the Alexander Arnolds, the Lucas Dinas, basically the wing backs that take set pieces. And it's kind of been a mistake for me, actually. I haven't captained those guys enough just because I had been afraid that they were too chalky, and they are sometimes. But if I think you can get, like, if you can get different on those slates,
yeah. I think guess. For TAA specifically, I found that if Robertson is cheaper enough, if he's less expensive enough than TAA, he's actually sometimes more beneficial because
price has everything to do with it. Price has everything to do with it. Like, I wish we had some Premier League examples currently, but there was a women's slate recently where like all the best plays were expensive. And then you had a left back that takes sets, and she was only like 5K or not even 4,500 or something. And she's still probably only going to score like 8 points, maybe 10 points or something. But that, even that can be enough, like 12 points. And they're like, for sure, the nuts. Like, it depends on price. It definitely depends on price. If they're priced too closely to goal scorers, then I'm probably not going to do it unless like it's a trend. Like, I'm still trying to captain guys that are going to score 2 goals. But I didn't do it enough last year, but again, it's all slate dependent. It's tough to just talk general. Showdown is the toughest to talk general about.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Everything is slate dependent for Showdown.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's the last slide. We got some more comments, though. I'll just keep your prior winning lineup here on the screen. Just in terms of Showdown, Nico is just saying he's seen Saramek play a lot of double goalkeepers. And yeah, that's one of Saramek's strategies. He just runs out double goalkeepers.
Oh, I love double keeper. Yeah, I do it all the time.
He does it almost, from what I saw, pretty much every Showdown slate.
I do it pretty much every one too, especially the ones like, I mean, this happens all the time. The City Showdowns, the Liverpool Showdowns, it can be anyone where there's a big favorite. A lot of times I'll just have the opposing keeper from the other team. Like, the opposing keeper is going to be my highest owned player. Like, I'm looking for them to get scored on even 3 times and make 6 saves, and 6 points can be optimal from a 4K keeper. I mean, it happens all the time. So yeah, I love double keeper. Definitely. Even when you captain keeper, you can have keeper, the other keeper in utility.
So we got a question. This one's kind of 4 months from now, but Javier is asking, will we expect to play World Cup a little different? I would just say yes. So he's saying we have a smaller sample size of how teams play tactically. Would you expect lower scoring games similar to kind of, I guess, the top four in the EPL? I mean, if you just look at international play, like, those games are lower scoring. You know, this is something we'll talk about eventually when it comes time, but I just remember Euros. I guess that was only a year ago, but how many matches where it was like, one of my favorite things to do was take the under on a half a goal in the first half, because these teams are a little more defensive. They don't know each other as well. And that hit like at a pretty crazy rate. And I don't think the World Cup's going to be any different unless it's like a minus 500 favorite and you have a one dominant team kind of a thing. So,
yeah, I know. I agree. I do expect World Cup to play a little different. Yeah, it's going to, and it'll be best to like sort of wait and see how it does too. And it's even going to be the same in the Premier League a little at the start of the season. Like, don't be so sure on things. I mean, a common mistake for people in DFS, like one of the most common mistakes, people are too sure about things that you shouldn't be sure about. And especially when this World Cup comes along, it's going to play differently. I would say there's at the start of the tournament, like there's, you can fade chalk more. There's fewer, you know, quote unquote locks. It's a time to take chances. Even at the start of the Prem, like I'm going to get a lot of stuff wrong. You know, hopefully not a lot, but I'm going to get things wrong. Same with the World Cup. And I mean, like I'm going to get some set piece takers wrong here and there, some formations wrong here and there, and it's going to happen to everybody, but that's going to happen more in the World Cup. And there's going to be subs and there's going to be teams surprisingly playing better. You know, it doesn't go with what the odds say. So yeah, it's going to play different. We'll get more into it when it comes closer.
Yeah, next week we will be back. But yeah, DraftKings came out with their season opener. We got a 4-game slate to kick things off. And I'm just looking at the schedule. So, you know, speaking of some things we have to learn early in the season, this first slate here, I mean, I guess not speaking about showdown slates that will happen before, but we're going to have Bournemouth. We're going to have to talk about Bournemouth. We're going to have to talk about Nottingham Forest. Two of the teams out of the 8 teams in that first 4-game slate we'll be talking about next week. But just some things we got to learn about. We got to learn about Leeds without Rafinha.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff. We got to learn about Perisic playing at Tottenham. See what kind of things he does in there. So, a lot of things to learn early in the season. We'll for the most part, there's not a ton of breaks, so we'll be content coming in hot and heavy, I guess. And there's not a ton of midweek stuff, but Ryan, 70 minutes here. Do you have any more tips here? We're done with the questions.
We could keep talking for a while. Unfortunately, I got to run.
Unfortunately, the baby is crying.
Yeah, you can hear the baby outside. So actually, he's waiting to come back in. And then as soon as he comes back in, I got to get ready. I'm going to meet my friends out in London. I'm already a little bit late. It's kind of annoying, but it's not the end of the world. This was good. I'm not complaining.
All right, Ryan. Thanks for joining us on this Q&A. It's been fun. We will be back next week. The plan is for Jordan Cooper to be with us as well. It's actually come up so quickly. I haven't even messaged him yet to find out if he'll be with us next week, but Ryan, you can find him at Ryan Belangi, and as usual, rotowire.com/soccer trial. You can get a free 10-day trial, no credit card required, but you can get all the content we have. We're going to be having the DFS cheat sheets. Ryan will be having his DraftKings articles as well, which, you know, goes maybe a little deeper at times into these slates. So Ryan, thank you for this, and we will see everyone next week.
Yeah, thanks. Can't wait.